Well, first of all, somebody asked me what I was going to say, and I said, you know, I don't know what to say at this point. Literally, the talking points that everybody in American life had 4 weeks ago, you have to throw them in the garbage can now because of this movement. We went from Hopi to Mopi, right? We were all Hopi in 2008. By 2009, we were all Mopi. And we were in Mopi land for 2 years. And a lot of us kept working hard. We were doing the best that we could. But it really took this to rise up and to show us that we weren't alone. And we are now in a situation where a couple of things I think are important. There's a big fact in American life, which is in global life, which is very simple. Our sisters and brothers in Asia have middle classes that are growing. God bless them. Hopefully they won't grow in a destructive way. Hopefully they'll grow with clean energy. But they're growing. Their middle classes are growing. Our middle class is falling apart. Our middle class is shrinking. We had 20 million people who 3 years ago were in the middle class. Today they are in poverty. People say, well, Van, you used to work, you know, to help poor people. How come you changed? I said, no, the constituency of poor people grew. I'm still working to help poor people. It's just now the poor people are the veterans who are coming home to no jobs, to no hope, to a lot of lip service, but 17 suicide attempts a day. So our young veterans who are coming home, the unemployment rate for veterans is 20 to 30% higher than their peer group, and their peer group of young people have a higher unemployment rate than anybody else. So they now become a part of this struggle for economic fairness and justice. The young people themselves, many of you out here, how many of you are college students out here? How many of you are recent college graduates? Right. How many of you guys are still praying for an unpaid internship? I'm going to let you in on a dirty secret in America. You used to be able to get out of college and get something called a job. Right? Not an internship, a job. You could start something called a career. That's been taken away from millions and millions of young people. They're graduating every spring off a cliff into the worst economy since the Great Depression, and neither political party has said anything about it. The constituency is bigger now. The firefighters, the teachers, the nurses. We have this new word that's almost like a slur called public employees. I say it's a new word just because when I grew up, I never met a public employee. I met teachers. I met librarians. I met nurses. I met firefighters. I met cops. I met people who were the backbone of the community, who we were taught to respect. These people never abandoned us in a crisis. No matter what happened, they were there. But we're supposed to abandon them. 1 million of them are supposed to be thrown under the bus in the next 12 months because we are not willing to raise taxes on the richest people ever born to keep them on the job. So the constituency of people who need real change is growing. And it's been growing steadily throughout the past 3 years, but nobody had been able to find a way to bring it to voice and to bring it to life and to give people the opportunity to express themselves. And so when this thing came out, people stood back from it. They said, you got a bunch of strange-looking young people in sleeping bags down there on Wall Street, and they're complaining about these economic issues. And the first question people asked was, well, yes, perhaps they have a legitimate complaint, but what is their proposal for derivatives reform? That's what I want to know. And it just let you know how completely tone-deaf the establishment has gotten. When people have been sitting on a white-hot stove for 3 years, you don't criticize how they holler. People sitting on a white-hot stove have a right to holler however they want to, as long as it's nonviolent. And these young people and the struggling folks who stood with them were hollering about issues that you couldn't even raise in Washington, D.C. for the past 3 years, this economic catastrophe. And the first thing the establishment says is, whoa, what are their demands? What are their demands? Hold on a second. First of all, It's not for lack of demands. It's not for lack of demands, okay, that we haven't gotten things done. Every organization, progressive organization in this country has a shop or an office or a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. with demands, with proposals, with policies, with statistics, and they haven't gotten a hearing in 3 years of the worst economic catastrophe. So don't pretend that now what's been missing has been the demands. It's not the demands, it's the willingness of people with power to listen to the demands. And that's what's changing now. That's what's changing now, is that now they have to listen. So the other thing about it is, as we've gotten to know the folks, it's become very clear to me, this movement that we're building is not powerless enough to have demands. This movement is not powerless enough to have demands. Powerful people don't have demands. Powerful people have goals. They just have stuff they're doing. When you go talk to people in Wall Street, you don't go to some big Wall Street banker and say, "What are your demands?" I don't have demands. I got a plan. I'm doing stuff. I got a plan. I'm doing stuff. Powerful people don't have demands. This movement is not yet powerless enough to have demands. This movement has goals. This movement has dreams. This movement has aspirations. And that's enough. Because what they tried to do was kill all the dreams off in America. They tried to kill off the American dream, kill off Dr. King's dream, make this country a place where it's no longer safe to dream. And what this movement is doing is saying, no, America will be a place where it is safe to dream again. That you say that these banks are too big to fail? No. Our dreams are too big to fail. Our communities are too big to fail. The green movement is too big to fail. There are things that are too big to fail. It's not these banks. It's not these banks. And so the last thing I want to say, it's cold out here. We're going to stay out here forever. But the last thing I want to say is this. This movement has not always had message clarity. I think that's fair to say. But it has always had moral clarity. That's the key here. The moral clarity of this movement. That some things are just not okay. It's not okay for the American dream to be turned on its head. The American dream, which is that the bad part of the American dream, which is the consumerism, the individualism, that's just the American fantasy. That everybody's going to be rich and you can just buy a bunch of stuff and be happy. You know, just buy a big enough flat screen TV, you can cover up all the holes in your life. No, that's the American fantasy, which has led to an American nightmare. That's what we're talking about. But when Dr. King stood up, the first thing he said about his dream, he said, "I have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream." He wasn't talking about consumerism. He was talking about living in a country where everybody counts, where everybody matters, where you shouldn't have to be born rich or with a certain skin color or eye shape or hair texture or from a certain part of town to be able to work hard and get somewhere. This is supposed to be a country. Now, the promise has been bigger than the delivery, but the promise means something. It's supposed to be a country where people should be able, if they're willing to work hard and play by the rules, to give their kids a better life. It's not okay for that to be turned on its head where now the people who are working the hardest are falling the furthest behind. The people who are working the hardest are the ones who can't find a way to succeed. The people who are obeying the rules every day, trying to make it, they're the ones who can't succeed, and the people who break the rules every day on Wall Street can't fail. Because somebody said they're too big to fail. That's wrong. That's wrong. And you shouldn't have to be able to produce 15 PhD degrees to be able to say something about that. Because the people with the PhD degrees have not solved the problem. The people who got all the credentials and all the education, did I say that wrong? Have not solved the problem. And so when the people who come forward now, who at least are clear about what the problem is, we should be happy. Now, there's the moral clarity here, though, is important. I want to say three things about it. There now is a moral challenge for the people who don't like this movement. But there's a moral challenge for this movement, too. the moral challenge for the people who don't like this movement, rather than saying, what are your demands and how are you going to, you know, come forward with these proposals? No, you tell us why these people who are suffering are going to be helped by your proposals. You say, well, you just want more tax breaks. Well, we had the Bush tax breaks, didn't create any jobs. The Obama tax breaks haven't created jobs. The private sector is sitting on trillions of dollars in capital. They won't spend it. They won't invest it. The banks won't. So you tell us, if you don't like this movement, what is your solution that's different than what it was 4 weeks ago? There's a moral challenge now for Democrats and Republicans to come forward with some real answers and real solutions at the scale of the problem being pointed to. So if you don't like this movement, fine. But then what's your answer? But this movement has a moral challenge as well. And it's tricky. But we got to talk about it now, because it will matter later. Is this movement, the 99%, against the 1%? Is it the 99% against the 1%? Or is it the 99% for the 100%? If it's the 99% against the 1%, I can already write the story for you. It's not a happy story. But if this is one of those rare movements, one of those very rare movements that almost never emerges in human civilization, one of those movements like Dr. King led or helped to lead, one of those movements we associate with Gandhi, with the South African struggle, where it's the 99% standing for the 100%. That's a movement that cannot be stopped. If this movement is mad at bankers because they're bankers, or mad at rich people because they're rich people, this movement can be stopped just like that. But if this movement is saying, no, if you're a banker, if you can do some math, if you understand finances, we love you. You work in a credit union, we love you 12 times more. We're not mad at you because you're a banker. We're mad at you when you're acting like a bankster. Right? Banksters, we got a problem with. When you use that knowledge, when you use that power solely to enrich yourself, you're a bankster. When you use that money to invest in a community garden or a community agriculture program or a solar company, you're a banker, and we love you. When you use your money to go down and buy a congressperson so you can write your own rules and get away with things that are bad for the country, you're a bankster, and we're mad at you. But when you use that clout and that standing to figure out ways to get the economy moving again, to loan to small businesses, to loan to small farmers, to take the debt blanket off of the homeowners and off the students so people can start to be alive again, you're a banker. Now, we need some bankers. We don't need banksters. And sometimes it's not clear to me, but if this is the movement, the 99% for the 100%, we need everybody's genius. We need everybody's creativity. But it's got to be about making this country and this earth better and not worse. This is going to be something in history books. It's up to the people out here to decide. The reason I'm so hopeful, and the reason that people came here in such large numbers, I've been to Occupy Wall Street. How you doing? I guess my time's up. That's good. Oh, good. That's good. Everybody just home. If we're in California, everybody goes home. The reason I can say that, I was at Occupy LA. I was at Occupy San Francisco. And I was also at Occupy Oakland. Let's give a round of applause to the people at Occupy Oakland.
Park in the thousands last night.
Yeah, who just retook the park in the thousands last night. Now, you should have made this loud earlier. So look, the reason I'm so hopeful about this movement is because when it first got started. And the folks down there on Wall Street were being ignored by everybody. And the media wouldn't give them any attention. And we were all saying, shoot, if you had 10 Tea Party people sleeping outside, it would be front page news from the first day. How can you have people sleeping outside for weeks and weeks? And the media not paying attention sent the wrong signal
to
some of our sisters and brothers in law enforcement. And so they thought that they could just do anything to these young protesters and nobody would care. And this was one of those moments where history hangs in the balance. What happened was, again, the media didn't cover these young people the way that they would have at the Tea Party, so it was discrimination against them because they're young, because they're on the left, or whatever the thing was. And there were some people in law enforcement that said, we can treat them, we can do anything we want to. Nobody cares about these people. And so, you know the story. Police officer pulls out his pepper spray and pepper sprays two young women who are standing there doing literally nothing. They didn't even have a protest sign. They were just standing there. And they were pepper sprayed and they fell to their knees, sobbing. That was one of those moments. The police officer didn't know when he pulled out his pepper spray that he wasn't going to hurt those young women. He was going to water a movement and create something that was going to change history. Because there was a decision that was made afterwards. People seeing that could have started throwing rocks and bottles. I believe that's what they hoped would happen. They were trying to provoke the crowd. They could have attacked. They could have done anything. But here's what they actually did. What they actually did, they stayed nonviolent. They maintained their discipline. And more than that, they came back the next day and they said, we are not fighting against the cops. Now this is extraordinary. Now you think about some of the disagreements we have with each other out here. You think about how hard it is for us to forgive each other out here. Here's somebody who's been pepper sprayed, who's been mistreated, and they're still under that threat, and they look at the police and they say, we're not fighting against the police. We're fighting for the police. We're fighting for the police. We're fighting for their pensions. They are a part of the 99% too. That was an extraordinary moment. Now, that wasn't poll tested. That didn't come out of some think tank. That didn't come out of some political strategy book. That came out of the hearts of the people who started this movement. And by sounding that note, like this note, they set a pathway for the rest of us to follow, which is about inclusion, which is about grace, which is about keeping the big picture in mind. You see, we're not fighting for the right to sleep outside, really. It's really not. We're really, there's some magic in this movement. We're fighting for the right of a few people to sleep outside so that millions can sleep inside. You see, that is the genius and a magic in this movement. And if we hold fast to it, if we keep with the path that's been emblazoned, if we stay loving, if we stay nonviolent, if we keep the grace, if we keep the big picture, that we're standing for something much bigger than any clump of ground or any group of folks, but we're going to stand with fierce determination that the people be heard, then we will have a movement that can put everybody back to work. We'll have an economy that puts everybody back to work, that brings everybody together, maybe for the very first time, that is uses our creativity not just to raise the issue and the problem, but to bring forward the solutions. That's the next step for this movement. I'm proud to be a part of it. Thank you very much.